The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have. I am David Sears, my co-host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Brandon Triola.
Totally ruined that intro. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. You're rusty.
Like, okay, wait. We'll have to wait for the. I know it's been a while.
It's been a while. We've had conversations, and apparently nobody wanted to have them, so we just didn't have them. It's all good. This is a podcast that isn't afraid to get into the nitty gritty. We talk about everything. We talked about Christianity. We talked. I had a couple episodes without you where we talked race relations and the Kendrick Lamar Super Bowl, and how that was a statement on black culture and why America was uncomfortable with that. So it's been fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm glad we can get back in the swing of things with my second favorite liberal after my wife, Brandon Triola.
Yeah, I think I'm moving up in the ranks. I think I was third last year.
You were third. You moved up.
I'm saying, just got to figure out how to beat her.
I don't know. No, you can't.
I'm going to.
Brandon, it has been an eventful year. We were talking, the last time we recorded, you and I, was pre-2024 election. Yes. It was right after Kamala had taken over for Joe Biden. How Trump had basically...
how she won the election and everything has been smooth sailing since.
If only... I told you that's how desperate I was that I just didn't want Trump again, that I actually voted for Kamala.
You finding that out about you, to me, that's a very objective line there. Like I know. Yeah. I'm liberal. You paint me whatever, you know, the picture, you know, whatever, you need, whatever word you need to use to paint who I am, knock yourself out, liberal, progressive, whatever. You know, I'll take that. But when I found out that David Sears was voting, for Ms. Harris, whew. You know, I thought Matt Murphy was going to roll over in his grave, man.
I don't think he knew about that.
He's alive.
He is alive. He just had shoulder surgery. He had a shoulder replacement surgery because he had messed up his shoulder so badly. I want to say he was playing softball 10 years ago or 15 years ago, and finally he just had to get it replaced.
Just like a libertarian to throw your shoulder out playing softball.
Hey, now.
Come on.
Hey, now, it's a sport. No, I play sports.
I knew that people accuse me of having Trump derangement syndrome all the time. And you know, again, I'll wear that hat. Sure. But yeah, so obviously for me, people I know, people like me, I was like, yeah, we're going to vote for him. But seriously, to find out you did, I was like, oh, okay.
Well,
it's not just me, man. It's not just me.
Here's the thing. He reminds me a lot of Thanos and Killmonger. You know, they had the right idea, but the way they're doing it is completely horrible. You know?
Yeah.
Because yes, we need to get control of the border situation, but basically putting the illegal immigrants in concentration camps in alligator Alcatraz, really? You're bragging about how you're going to let them get eaten by alligators if they try to escape? That, you know, that's crossing a line. That's crossing a line.
Well, it's very scary. It almost feels like we're that government and Running Man, you know, like that's the government we're becoming. The government Running Man, that's like everything is about entertainment, whether it's justice or, you know, everything's going to be put through the prism of entertainment. Justice and legislation and executive rulings, it's all going to be put through the prism of the entertainment. And again, like I said, getting control of the border, I mean, it's that same old conversation, you know, that he railroaded it for so long anyway and told Republicans not to do it so he could run off of it, so that you didn't get that comprehensive reform. And of course, I think you could say on the other hand, yes, Joe Biden, however aware he was, you dropped the ball on immigration and the border too early. And by the time they picked it up, it was too late. And then on top of all that, again, like I said, when we're talking about border security and we're talking about, okay, you're getting fentanyl across the border or you're seeing traffickers, human traffickers, drug traffickers coming across the border, that's fine. I do not care about the family that is coming across the border to try to make a living. and then send some money back home. Like, that is just
that
to problem. Me, that's never going to be a part of border security.
That problem has been around since Reagan, and it has continually kicked the can down the road. We haven't worked on immigration reform to actually make it where these workers who want to come in get work visas. You know, we haven't simplified the process at all. I remember John Oliver did a great in-depth piece on how difficult immigration has become now to legally immigrate unless you are someone who is a doctor or tech software engineer. It's ridiculously difficult nowadays for someone who just wants to come across and work in the fields, work in
whatever. Yeah. Usually manual labor. Let's go.
Usually manual labor or housekeeping of some sort. Or service industry of some sort. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And it's a problem that's been around since you and I have been children, and it's continuing on, and we won't see it resolved until we get someone who's serious about it, because the Democrats benefit from it with census voters. Republicans and their big business allies benefit from it for the cheap labor. So both sides benefit from it, and it's just kind of, yeah, we'll do something about it, and neither one does anything about it.
Yeah, what was it? Reagan was the last one. What, did he give amnesty for, what, 3 million?
Yes, and he was, yeah, he was supposed to be promised a way to fix the immigration system, and they didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, like I said, I mean, that's it's just one of those things. Is like, I think most Americans would appreciate all factors being considered. Like, yeah, okay, let's talk about, like how you said, how both parties are benefiting from it. Let's talk about how about some of the problems that the United States created in South America in the first place.
You can't get into that stuff. You can't acknowledge.
Possibly consider that. And again, that's where I think is, once Orange Cankles, whatever that is, I think that's congestive heart failure on standby. But once he's gone, what's going to go with him? I mean, that's what I think the whole problem with those of us who have, quote, Trump derangement syndrome for the past 10 years was like, we know he's going to die. He's going to pass away. He's not going to be able to yap his mouth and talk the way he does and say the things he says and be the bully that he is forever. He's not going to be able to do that. So what's going to last after it? And that, I think that has been the biggest fear for people like me, is that this becomes normalized. Because you already have the people on the right that are going, they're lashing back. Why are people getting about like this about politics? Like I have about 4 or 5, 6 aunts and uncles that refuse to talk to me because I called them out, for supporting this and claiming to be good people and then standing by this. And that's what I get back every time. Why are we arguing about politics?
My biggest concern, and I think South Park did a great job with it, was the left went a little too far with the wokeness. And when the pendulum swung back, it swung back way too far to the right. It scares me, because that means when it's going to swing back to the left, it's going to go real far to the left. And then when it swings back to the right,
the person I voted for is could possibly be the next mayor of New York City.
I actually agree with some of his policies. I'm not saying all of them are great, but I read into his community grocery store idea, which is basically like the commissaries on military bases. My concern is if it becomes like the ABC board here in Alabama, where all grocery supplies and everything have to be bought through the city, and it's another way for cities or for the state government to profit.
I see that up here, like with grocery stores that take EBT. I mean, you pay so much more there. They jack up the prices because of how they get in the store. So the prices of the store are high because most people are going to be using EBT cards.
Yep.
And so they just take from there. And so they're getting less for the money anyway. Yeah. No, I mean,
it's not a perfect system, but it's an idea. Is it Mamdani? Did I pronounce it right?
Mamdani.
Mamdani. He's putting forth ideas. He's putting forth ideas. You know what? We haven't tried them. If we try them and they fail, then we know they failed, but we won't know until we try. And we've tried it so far with this one way, and it's not doing anything. So let's go after it a different approach.
Well, and I think we're seeing too, again, this is with Mondani and then seeing the established corporate Democrats, seeing the Andrew Cuomo's, just seeing this firsthand, his god awful campaign commercials where he's pretending to be an everyday blue collar New Yorker. I'm like, dude, when is the last time you've been in the city? When's the last time you've been in any of these boroughs when you're not campaigning? They had one of him, like, you know, going into a deli and talking with a meat guy and be like, you know, what's wrong? He's like, oh, the price of meat's too high and the rent here and down. He's like, yeah, those problems are da da da. You know, trying to pass it off like regular conversation. There was one where he had like jumper cables and he was trying to jump off some guy's car. And part of the reason why he lost is obviously because he left in disgrace. I was someone that was actually first off proud of the way he was handling the COVID. As someone who lived through COVID in New York City, I was pretty much proud of the way that he was handling the response. But I also saw the horrible things that happened. We just had friends of ours that had to close their bar that they've had for 10 years because they could not bounce back from COVID. Because, you know, yeah, people were given some money, but like they lost so much money by not being able to be open, you know? So it's like, you know, you feel for those people too, you know? So it's like, you're torn on what was the right moral choice to do. But anyway, going back to Cuomo, Mondani's rise is what it's kind of like the AOC effect in the sense that AOC could pull people in her district, but she also pulled MAGA people.
Mm.
She pulled a huge portion of MAGA people with her. And what is that connection? It is just like how, if you try to look at this objectively, although Trump was, you know, vocalizing everything that he hated out there and that connected with people, what also connected with people was the idea of being angry and fed up, and like really angry and fed up. And I think the Democrats are starting to experience that. Almost not as dumb as the Trump movement, but that grassroots, hey, we're going to go with this guy that is so unconventional, this Muslim guy that's 30 something years old, you know, in the city with the second largest Jewish population in the world. This guy's going to be the front runner.
Right? And it's different because for the majority of our lives, we were born towards the tail end of communism in Russia and the Red Scare. And we've heard socialism as a dirty word for the most part in the United States, for going back to Clinton when he tried to get the socialized medicine. Oh, that's evil. You shouldn't have socialized health care. But the more you look at it, the more you see that other democratic nations around the world have some type of safety net that's set up by socialism, have a state-run healthcare. Well, yes, it's not the best system in the world, but it allows people who wouldn't have access, and those who can afford to go elsewhere, to go elsewhere. And you haven't really seen anybody on the national scale or national scene do anything like this. You have Gavin Newsom, who have no idea what he's doing right now with his podcast. And
this is part of Democrats' lane 2029 project, their project 2029. It's to replicate that bro sense pocket, that Joe Rogan, that Theo Vaughn, whoever else you want to say that's a little bit on the right, even the Rush Limbaughs, they want that on the left. And I don't understand, like, didn't we already try to do this with like Al Franken and like left wing news talk station?
It was something America, Radio America or something like that. Radio,
how well did that work out?
Well, it's just
because that's not an outlet for people on that side of the aisle. It's not where they want to be.
Well, they're inauthentic. You know, I think if they found something that was authentic, that would appeal to people. If you look at Mondani, he connected on TikTok by going up to the chicken and rice guys and saying, why are your prices $2 more than they were last year? And the chicken and rice guy explained that he has to pay a fee for his cart, and that cart fee, he has no idea where it goes, but it keeps going up and up and up. And he's not sure why he has to pay such a high fee if most of it goes, I think, to a middleman who isn't even part of the government. And it's problematic. It's something that I wish, you know, we actually did, Doge actually looked at it instead of just taking a chainsaw, like getting the weeds and stuff, which would have taken more than 6 months, of course, but getting in the weeds about government waste and see what truly is government waste, what truly is necessary.
I think they're looking at it on the wrong levels. Go to the cities.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at it in the cities. I mean, and look, as someone who's like considered myself, I mean, I'm a transplant New Yorker, but coming up on total of 10 years soon, the next year or two, you know, in seeing politics, how it runs differently in the South, it's, you know, your Mayor Adams Democrat is basically what your way right Republican's going to be in Alabama.
Mm.
I mean, that's your Cuomo is a Republican. Cuomo could easily be a Republican in a red state. It's not these career politicians. They know how to do it. I mean, this is, you know, this is what, you know, Cuomo's leaning into it right now. We saw, like, in the campaign against Mondani, his team was running photo ads or putting up photos of Mondani on television in print, and they had thickened his beard
to make him look like a Muslim extremist.
To make him look like one of those scary Muslims.
What a shock.
Yeah.
Jingoism still plays in New York? What?
Yeah. I'm telling you, and me being on the UF, so I'm part of this UFT teachers website where it's all the teachers in New York City. We're allowed to just talk on this Facebook group, and you have to be a teacher in New York City to be a part of it. And the amount of Islamophobia and people that are trying to paint him as some radical Muslim that's going to bring Sharia law to New York City, I swear to God, I was like, how am I back in the South? How is that possible?
Well, the more things change, the more they say the same. I mean, I would say that a Jersey Shore type person is the same as a Floribama type person. You know, they're all about getting laid, drinking, because that's something that my wife and I have talked about.
Is that what goes on in Floribama?
Huh?
Is that what goes on in Floribama?
You've never been
drinking.
There's drinking.
Head down to Floribama. I've been over at the Jersey Shore, man. I'm not getting anything. I need to head down to Floribama.
Well, it's amazing to me how similar are, like, poor white culture is basically the same as poor black culture, you know? Yeah. It's just there's small variances in what it is. And conservatives in big cities are the same as conservatives in small cities. They're afraid of foreigners. They're afraid of people that don't look like them. They don't want any change. And it was better back in the day because we were in charge.
Well, we had a group of Jewish teachers, Federation of Jewish Teachers, that's what they call themselves, write a letter asking our union not to endorse Mondani, and the UFT they've endorsed people, they endorsed someone all the time. They just go, we endorse Mayor Adams, and that's basically because the UFT is not going to endorse a Republican unless they really commit to, you know, really working with education. But so when. What was I saying? I totally went blank.
All right. So we were talking about Mondani and how Cuomo was acting like a Republican.
Oh, yeah. Like the amount of like Orthodox Jewish teachers that were against the union endorsing him. And everyone's like, we've endorsed people all the time that we don't agree with, but we just go, they will be the best for education. And it's not like you have to vote for whoever the union endorses.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make you vote that way, obviously. So, but just to see the backlash simply because, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just going to break it down. It's mostly because he's a Muslim guy. And then they throw in the socialist thing after that because they're like, hey, that's the ringer. You know, if I say he's a Muslim and he's a socialist, that's what's really going to turn people off.
It's 100% true. And it's why right now the Birmingham mayoral race is going on and it's an absolute cluster, you know. They're not focusing on how they would improve Birmingham. It's all become social attacks about who is authentically black. You know, what does that have to do with running the city of Birmingham? There's more than just black people in Birmingham. You have to be able to manage a city budget. We've got a huge problem with the Birmingham Water Works. We've got streets that are in absolute disarray, and we're seeing a massive flight from Birmingham of people to the suburbs because the city schools are absolutely horrendous. Focus on the real stuff and not on who's authentically black. It's ridiculous. Personal attacks and it's frustrating. I'm so glad I don't have to cover it. Makes me so happy. I don't work at Talk 99.5 right now.
Because we'll be talking about it.
right now I worked this past Friday. I ran Leland Live and the entire show was about Ghislaine Maxwell talking to the feds in Tallahassee. And it was the amount of backbending people are doing and sidestepping to say that Trump had nothing to do with Epstein and he only rode on his plane with his family when his plane broke down. And it's just like, why would, he totally disassociated him and banned him from Mar-a-Lago after he found out about the sex trafficking. I was like, dude, come on, be honest. Let's be honest. I'm one of those people, and I hope most Republicans would do this, but I doubt they would because it's become a cult. If Trump's on the list, if Mitch McConnell's on the list, if Vance is on the list.
I don't even want to. Why'd you have to put that visual in my head?
You have it.
McConnell going to Epstein Island.
I'm just saying. I don't care who's on the list. I don't care. I don't care if Fyodor the Turtle's on the list. I think we need to get everybody on there. And I shared a meme that pissed off some people because it's the Nicolas Cage, Pedro Pascal meme where Nicolas Cage has his face.
Yeah.
He's like, and I was like, he's like, you know, Bill Clinton may be on the list and other high profile Democrats. And Pedro's like, I don't care. Just release the list. So
no, well, someone told me they're like, you know, Bill Clinton could be on the list. I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna have to throw away my Bill Clinton mug and my Bill Clinton T-shirt, and I'm gonna have to close down my Bill Clinton store, and I'm gonna have to, you know, log off my Bill Clinton TikTok. You know, I mean, I don't care. Throw if he's on there, throw him on there too. But I mean, just like to the extent that, like, I mean, and people are gonna buy it, but I'm like, let's see. Trump's personal lawyer, who now happens to be AG, is going to question her, already given her some immunity, and then he's going to get down and make sure, you know, what's really in those files. He's going to get it straight from the source, and it's going to put Trump in a very falsely positive light, and then you're going to see some prominent Democrats in there and maybe a couple other people that have fallen out of Trump's good graces. And then she's going to get the pardon and he's going to be like exonerated and he's going to deal with the fallout of the pardon that he gave her. It's like, how do I get through this with getting the least bit of fallout? And if you do that, then you're going to have people in the base and be like, see, look who was in there, Bill Clinton and all those other Democrats. I knew it. I knew Trump was going to, he's playing chess the whole time.
He's playing 4D chess while they're playing checkers.
He's playing four games of chess at once with his eyes closed. I mean,
no, I get it. And right now the people of his base are so blinded that there's nothing he could do. He, like he said, he could go out, shoot a man in the middle of Fifth Avenue and they'd still applaud him. And unfortunately, when you get to that point, it has become a cult and it is a very dangerous thing for that party to do. Now, Is he the Hitler, and if he dies, the Nazi party or the GOP will die? Or is this like Lenin and then J.D. Vance or somebody else will become Stalin and take over and make it even worse? You know, that's the scary part because we've seen this in history multiple ways. Sometimes it's the figurehead dies and everything dissolves, and sometimes the figurehead dies and his successor is even worse than the figurehead.
Yeah, well, I think the problem, I mean, obviously, Trump became the selling point for anything. I mean, there's always people behind the scene. It's like when people talk about like George W. Bush, and I'm like, yeah, he's pretty bad, but he was also kind of stupid and kind of got duped by his, you know, wasn't smart enough to realize he was being used by his vice president and Rumsfeld on a lot of things. And you know, it's one of those things like if you talk to him today, like he some interview was saying, yeah, and really wish we'd have found those WMDs. And I'm like, dude, you're still there. You're still there going like, oh, I wish we would have found them. And we just like, I mean, I guess if I was in that position, it'd be very hard for me to come out and go, you know what? None of it was there. None of it was there. I was just, you know, taken over. So you like transfer that to like looking at Trump, you know, how many, the thing that that's what the thing is how many people, the Project 2025 people, how many people are actually pulling the strings and using Trump as much as they can as that megaphone? Cause they're going to toss him up. I mean, they're going to toss him away soon. I'm sorry. Those cankles, that's, I'll be surprised if that's not linked to congestive heart failure.
If he dies in office, we will see one of the craziest shuffles of power. And I don't know if JD Vance would be built up to be the successor, or if come 2028, there'd be a scramble and an open primary to see who could be it. And who, because right now, I don't know who the successor would be in the Republican primary. They're building up Vance, trying to build up Vance, but I don't know if he has the charisma.
Well, see, and I wonder if this is what finally produces multiple parties, because like it should be a slam dunk. It should be a slam dunk for Democrats in 2026, but I'm not so sure.
Did you watch any of the young Democrats conference that was going on? It was stupid. It was bad. It made the Democratic Party look really just disorganized.
But that's what I'm saying. When Trump is this bad and you still have approval ratings that low and you're the other party, you throw out the playbook, man. I mean, that's what I don't get. And this is why I think Democrats should be punished, because they're part of the same ilk of Republicans in the sense that they abandon the common people. They abandon the rural person. Bill Clinton totally shifted the party more towards being Republican, doing things that no one had done because they had been out of office for so long. And it was like, okay, well, I've got to act like Reagan. So again, my thing is like, that's what I'm worried about. You're seeing these Democrats that are kind of trying to put on that Trump-esque attitude of like, forget these guys. I'm the big dog around here. Da, 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 da. And it's just playing off, for me personally, it's just playing off as bad theater. It's basically like a Disney live-action remake.
So what you mean is Ohana means family and no one gets left behind unless you have to go to college?
Exactly. There you go. That's what's killing me, because like you have such an opportunity here. Like take someone with Mondani, go, okay, you know what? I voted for him. I don't think every idea he has is going to work. I think he's going to get in there and a lot of it's going to be, oh crap, I can't do this. Whoa, okay. That's not going to work at all. But I bet he's willing to learn. I bet he's willing to make some needed compromises, but playing this whole like into.
Well, you just said a very dirty word. You can't say compromise. Compromise. It is. You look weak if you compromise now. That's unfortunate. Yeah. And
that's what I'm saying. You set that horrible tone in politics now. That's what Trumpism has set. That's what I'm afraid of hanging around once he's gone, is that this. Wait, can I say the S word?
You can say anything but the F word.
Okay, this shit gets normalized. That's the biggest fear, because, and again, this just comes from teaching kids. They think this is, they're like, yeah, this is how politics has always been. I'm like, no, it wasn't. It got this way. It got this way because the money got out of hand. You know, everyone was getting paid. It became like a, you know, you'd go into Congress making barely six figures, and then you retire a millionaire, you know. Or you'd have like $5 million in the bank when you left.
I mean,
like,
Feinstein, how much did Feinstein end up? She ended up with almost 20 something million when she retired. Nancy Pelosi's wealth has increased. Yeah. Everybody's
that
wealth
is,
has that increased.
That's oligarchy. That's oligarchy right there.
And we don't, they rule themselves. So we can't make a rule saying you can't do inside trading. One of my favorite follows, I forget the name off the top of my head, but they follow every senator and representative's stock portfolio, and they tweet out as soon as they trade something or sell something. So you can't have the information too. And it's going to take stuff like that. We're going to have to hold them accountable. We're going to have to, I mean, we as states realize we have the party to vote the or power to vote all these people out. But we just keep saying, oh, it's my representative that's a good one. All the others are the problem. And that problem, I mean, that's why we had Spencer Bacchus. It's why we had Richard Shelby, because Richard Shelby kept bringing that pork to Alabama. Oh, he's a good guy. Let's keep voting him in.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's so frustrating to me about Democrats is like you have a moment to recapture, I think, recapture a lot of rural America that you lost right now. Because there, I've even seen like going on TikTok, like people going like, yeah, yes, I voted for Trump and I regret it now. And then like, you know, it's just like part of me wants to just slap the crap out of him. Like, oh, the signs were there. How did you miss it?
Well, I'll tell you why.
Okay, you figured it out. You woke up. That's the type of people that the Democratic Party should be catering to right now. All right, well, give me an opportunity to bring you back in. Let me tell you what we really stand for and what we're going to try to do.
James Carville said it best in 92, and Clinton ran on it. It's the economy, stupid. And when Kamala is saying, oh, the economy's great. Oh, look at the all-time stock highs we're hitting. You know, that's great and all. I can't afford to have a 401k because I am so strapped for cash between groceries and medical bills that I don't have as much money to invest in this stuff. So that doesn't affect me. When it's nearly $5 for a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread is $4. I mean, that's what you need to focus on, bringing down those prices, going after, oh goodness sakes, the big grocery chains that are jacking up prices because they can, because, oh, it was supply chain issues. And then when they got those fixed, they just left the prices at what they were. I mean, it's frustrating. It feels we're on the verge of a revolution, and I'm not sure which way it's going to go, you know?
Yeah, well, no, I that's what I'm saying. I feel like there's so many different ways that it could go, and I feel – that's what I'm saying. I wonder if this is the time where we start breaking into these four parties, you know, that you're going to see – you know, are you going to see more people like Mandani come out and win, or is it going to be the corporatist Democrats that continue to successfully hammer that message of – he's a socialist. You don't want a socialist. We're not about socialism.
Well, you're there. So what do you see from the big D Democrat party with Mandani? Are they getting behind him, or are they going to start funneling money to Adams and Cuomo? They're still not. They're independent.
Hakeem Jeffries is, you know, and again, I have a lot of compliments for him and a lot of great stuff that he does. But again, he's also Nancy Pelosi's protege, you know? And so when she gives him advice and say, hey, we don't need to endorse Mandani. No, what he should do is endorse Mandani and say, listen, I'm a little concerned about some of these things. They are in my vision, but you know what? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And until he says otherwise, you know, da-da. And instead, what he did is he focuses on a cultural speech that Mandani uses and plays into the rhetoric that it means that he wants to annihilate Israel. And it's like, it's not. He's talking about, and again, you have to study the history of the Middle East. You have to study the history of the Palestinians. You have to understand the history of Iran. And for as many horrible things that they have done, there are many, many people in that country that don't do anything. Our landlord, my landlord, is an Iranian political refugee. Mm. He was in prison from the time he was like 17 and 19. And then now he's over here and he said, oh, it's a beautiful country. Oh, I love it so much. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a person that loves their culture and their heritage. And I can totally separate that type of person from the government that they're under. And, but you see, because I hate to say it this way, we're such a Jewish heavy city. People play into that. Now I will say, so I don't sound anti-Semitic on here. Yeah, I think there's some right good fears that the Jewish community has. There has been a rise of anti-Semitism. But what we don't need to confuse it with is the idea that Mandani is the type of person that's bringing that in just because he also wants to see a different oppressed people not feel oppression. Mm. That should be something that Jewish people, Christian people, atheists, agnostic, whatever, should be able to celebrate the fact that this guy doesn't want people to be oppressed. That shouldn't be controversial. Mm. And so you're seeing these, again, these Cuomo is trying to, he's pushing right now the socialist ticket. Eric Adams is still in the race. I have no idea why. I mean, this dude is the most out of touch person. Anytime I see him talking or the way he talks with different groups, I mean, he code switches constantly, and not like the survival type of code switch or the cultural type of code switch that you need. We're talking just straight up political code switching. And he's doing the same thing that Mandani doesn't know how the city runs. Mandani bucked the trend because he was one of the only mayoral candidates that was like, I'm not going to take a trip to the state of Israel. That's not on my agenda. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about New York. I'm concerned about the Jewish people in New York. I'm concerned about the Muslim people in New York and the black people in New York and the white people in New York. And that was like, no mayoral candidate has done that. I mean, has said like straight up, no, I'm not going to go make a state visit. There's no reason to. I got work here I got to do.
That's something I've never understood, is when state politicians go to foreign countries. I understand maybe if you're trying to do economic development, but I don't understand just visiting for the sake of visiting. You know, that never made sense.
Well, yeah, New York City is doing it, the Jewish population here.
The only thing that's concerned me so far about Mandani, two things. Number one, when he said he'd arrest Netanyahu if he stepped in the city for war crimes, it's like, wow, that's a bit of your power overreach. And number two is, I'm not sure how that just downsizing the police force and using more counselors. How are you going to respond to violent crimes? That's my only two concerns. And
well, here's the thing. Now, I mean, I'm not downing the NYPD. I see NYPD guys standing on the platforms 90% of the time on their phones. And yes, their presence there is a deterrent, and I understand that. And I have seen them helped a lot of people that needed to get some help get off the train, and they've done a lot of great things. But I think the premise to me is correct, and it's a logical step. If I have someone that's in a domestic violence situation, yeah, I might want a cop there or a cop, you know, there to for the last resorts or to make sure that things don't get physical. But also, I'm talking. Cop doesn't have to go through intense psychological training. A cop does not have to go through and figure out and study the psyches of people and understand how domestic abuse works. They're there to stop something. They're there to be a force. They're there to make something happen or not happen based on, I tell you to do something, you do it because it's the law. I don't understand the opposition to say, hey, we want to include more social workers and people with psychology degrees in responding to some of these things. You know, maybe they go along beside a police officer for a while.
I think that would make sense. I mean, yeah.
Right. But
I mean, well, here's the thing I'd like to see. We both agree police officers have difficult jobs. I think they need to have some more training. I think they need to actually approach some of those. Some of those social worker classes, and I know they may say it's garbage to do it, but I think it would help them, especially with the way they think. We've seen some cops who do try to be friends of the people they're in the neighborhood with. So they say, I'm here for you. They try to help they try to Andy Griffith it, you know, where they try to get in there, understand how the people work. And those tend to be the best cops in the best areas, and they help diffuse situations. You know, and I think we're lacking a lot of that personal interaction, personal relationships that we see, that we need to see in communities to make both sides trust each other.
That's the social media effect, you know, affecting everyone, you know, even the police officers. I mean, it affects me, you know, as a teacher. I want to be less and less engaged a lot of the times because I'm like, ugh, forget this. Give me, you know, go give me somewhere I can complain and someone will agree with me, you know, something like that. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think if both Adams and Cuomo stay in the race, their votes will be split and Mandani wins. I would expect Adams to drop out before Cuomo because I think Cuomo is going to be able to gain that ground because again, New York City has one of the lowest voter turnouts in the nation. I mean, yeah, Mandani won by 100,000 votes, but what was it, like 400,000 to 300,000? How many millions of people are in the city that are eligible to vote, I guess? So you're going to see like more of the mainstay people come out in November. And I think if it is Cuomo and Mandani, it will be very, very close. I think Mandani will have the edge simply because that it's that pendulum swing where it's like, you know what? They got Trump. Let's see what we can do with this guy.
Here's the thing I'm concerned about for Mandani. He starts getting too popular. He starts looking like he's going to win. Trump pulls the, oh, we're going to expire your citizenship and revoke that and send you back overseas, which I think would be a huge shitstorm if he did that. But I could totally see him trying to play that move. And the Democrats are like, oh, no, don't do it.
No, he's going to continue to play and push what he can get away with. I mean, Stephen Colbert's not going to be around. And to sit there and be ignorant and say that Trump had nothing to do with that, that's just straight up ignorance.
It is. And I fear for Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. Because they, especially after Monday, when he did that musical number at the end to Paramount and to Donald Trump.
Well, I think this is why I connect so much, I think, sometimes with the arts and stuff. It's just there's just that born in rebellious nature. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're doing it for a good cause. And that's what like excites you. It's like I don't want to be an ass for any other reason, but I'll be an ass, you know, just to be funny about it and give some good commentary.
Yeah. It's like the penis sketch on SNL only aired once, but it was Conan O'Brien. They had just approved Safe Harbor and they wanted to test the limits, and the people at SNL told them, don't test the limits. So if you tell an artist to not do something, they are immediately going to do it. So they spent the entire, they had every male cast member topless from the waist up, and basically it looked like a giant counter in front of them. And every word was, hey, nice penis, man, that penis is looking good tonight. And they just kept doing it over and over for, I think, a solid 5 minutes, just because they told Conan and the writers not to do it. So of course they're going to do it.
Yeah. But again, like I said, that's what, that's to me, that's the test of how free your society is. You know, how free is your society really is how are your artists able to express themselves?
That's why I believe in comedy and the First Amendment. You should be able to say anything without a threat. You can't say, I'm going to kill you. But I mean, I'm a Christian who doesn't take offense to all the Family Guy Jesus jokes or the South Park Jesus jokes. I just think because they tend to give it to everyone. Now, they can't do the Muslim jokes because you can't show Muhammad without angering the Middle East and getting threatened of violence. But I have no problem with them parodying. No one should be above parody, and you should be able to laugh at yourself and laugh at your leaders. I mean, it's scary to me when you get to that point where no one, when you have a sacred cow that no one can go after. And
yeah,
I mean, it's a society that's very scary to me when you have sacred cows that are untouchable. And if you go after them, you are met with fierce retribution. And we're starting to see that. And I mean, thank God for Matt and Trey. They signed a $1.5 billion deal on Monday, released that on Wednesday. Like, what you going to do? Dump us? We got the contract.
So genius, man.
You need to go and watch their Comic-Con. Right. Their Comic-Con panel was amazing. So
I saw bits of that. Yeah. I want to see the whole thing. I did see bits of it, and I saw the fake sorry they gave.
Yeah, the fake sorry, and then how they fooled everybody with the previews for the season. They made a bunch of fake episodes for the season to make it look like that was going to be the season. Like, of course we're going to be topical. We're still going to do it week to week, not knowing what we're going to talk about. So I loved it.
Yeah, they're great, man. They're great.
And I think that the biggest problem right now is people are afraid to take on Trump. Even Columbia has bowed to Trump. Harvard's going to bow to Trump.
That's what's scaring me is how much of the institutions are bowing to Trump too. And then again, I don't understand it. You know, it was very much how like Jon Stewart said, like, when has he ever been like, okay, that's good. That's enough. I'm going to ease up. No.
He keeps going. You give an inch, he takes a mile.
Yeah, that's he knows his time is limited, and he's trying to get as much stuff changed and as much stuff with his name on it that he thinks is going to last beyond him. He's playing a game of immortality right now because he knows his days are numbered. Every time he looks down at his ankles.
I know they're trying to exploit the, what is it, 23rd or 22nd Amendment, trying to say there's a loophole in it where it's only 8 consecutive years that you're president. So you can, you, if you weren't elected 8 consecutive years, you can do a third term. So, and you know, he's going to judge shop it. He's going to lawyer shop and judge shop it. And
yeah. Find someone that's crazy enough to try to make that argument.
Yeah. So, well, let's wrap things up. We've gone 45 minutes. Let's try to do this more than, you know, once every 6 months.
Once every 4 months. We could do it. We could do it again next week. I still want to do that one where we talk about
masculinity.
And we talk about masculinity too. I wanted to do the one on mental health. I thought that'd be good. Where you could, if
yeah, you know, I don't mind. I'm actually coming up on the 20th anniversary of my suicide attempt. It'll be this November. Yeah, it'll be my 20th anniversary. So
let's talk about it. Let's get real next time.
Let's do it. Let's do it next week. We'll talk mental health on.
You ready for depression and panic attacks,
dude? Panic attacks are no joke. Those stuff. Oh God, they're bad. They get bad.
I grew out of.
I had to go to the ER for one because my blood pressure would not come down. They gave me a bunch of tranquilizers and I slept for about 13 hours after that.
Oh my God. That's nice.
So, but,
all right, man.
Brandon, where can they find you on social media and how is Brooklyn Start coming along?
Brooklyn Start's coming along well right now.
Harassing John Krasinski.
Yes, I will tell that story next week where I pitched our show to John Krasinski one night after his one-man show, and I used my children to lie to do that. Brooklyn Starts doing well. We're still in some festivals. We didn't get in the Sidewalk Film Festival in Birmingham, which is a little disappointing, but we've got some big ones coming up the next year, trying to see how they do. We've taken home second place in an award, in one of the festivals. And then we've gotten finalists in the others. Really just kind of like kind of focus on that. But I'm also kind of shifting away, kind of like letting that rest. And then I'm shifting away, focusing on my book right now, which is almost done, which hopefully is going to be out by the end of August. I've been working on building up Instagram and Facebook, which ironically has my followers have gone up there. I don't know why. But I'm not going to.
You're funny. Your stuff's funny. Dude, Evangelical Jesus is one of my favorite bits you've got right now.
That's a fun character. That's a lot of fun. That's a fun character.
You're going to talk about him. It's all right.
Oh, I totally am. But, at least Evangelical Jesus will be there with me. he follows me everywhere. But you can find me on Instagram at Brandon C. Triola, TikTok at Brandon Triola, and Facebook at just Brandon Triola.
All right. I'm at David Sears 75 on Twitter, David Sears 1982 on Instagram. You'll see a shit ton of memes because that's basically all I post are memes and covers of books I've read. This has been Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have. We'll be back with a new episode next week, delving into the really light topic of mental health and suicide. So be prepared to join us for that fun thing, and thank you for listening. This is Conversations That Nobody Wants to Have with David Sears and Brandon Triola on Tony Curry Radio.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.